States government has attempted to confiscate billions of dollars and has been successful in doing so. It particularly likes going after big business. Not long ago, they confiscated enormous amounts of money from Pratt & Whitney, the aviation engine manufacturer, because they accused Pratt & Whitney of providing insights into helicopter engines to the Chinese. Well, they were selling a commercial, not a military, engine to a Chinese civilian helicopter manufacturing company. But the federal government says, oh boy, they're our enemy. You can't give them that technology, as if the government owned the technology. But they were fined huge amounts of money. Recently, most of the investment banking firms in New York have been fined billions of dollars. Not too long ago, about, 2 months ago, the federal government announced that it had fined Toyota over $1 billion. For no other reason, really, than the government covets money. Well, now they've sued and prevailed, not in court, of course. They don't actually go to court for these settlements. But they sued Switzerland's second largest bank, which is Credit Suisse, $2.5 billion in penalties. Now, the way they went around getting the $2.5 billion, because, by the way, the Credit Suisse, what they were suing them for, is for following Swiss law and not divulging personal information about bank accounts. You know, most countries have laws that state that, you know, your bank account is your business. It's not the government's business. But the, you know, U.S. wants to have access to everybody's business. And so they sued Credit Suisse for doing what the Swiss laws dictate, which is to leave financial matters private. But you see, with the financial matters private in a Swiss bank, the U.S. government can't confiscate, don't even know how much money there's there to confiscate of somebody's savings. So they sued them. Now, they didn't take the case to court. What they did instead is said, you know, the New York State will revoke its regulatory license if you don't roll over and play dead. If you have a choice, you can either violate Swiss law and give us all of the information that we want about savings accounts in Switzerland and tell us who's has the account and how much money is in the account and give us information on all the transactions related to those accounts. You can either violate Swiss law and give us everything that we covet in terms of information and give us access to those accounts so we can take the money. Or you can pay what we think is being deprived us in tax, $2.5 billion. And, oh, by the way, if you don't want to play, we'll revoke your license in the state of New York, even though you didn't violate any rules in the state of New York. That's how the government plays. There is a problem with that, beyond the fact that it's immoral and unethical. The problem with that is twofold. One is that you've got a government in the United States that has run amok, that just it absolutely thinks that it should control everybody. And everybody's money is their money, and it's not the people who made the money. No, it's not theirs. It's the government's. The government wants their hand in everybody's pocket. Now, that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is the government is drowning in debt and is looking for any way to take that debt, to resolve their debt. But if you confiscated the wealth of everyone in America, you still wouldn't resolve the deficit. Debt would still be there if you confiscated every penny that everybody had. And in fact, it would be worse because now you would have no incentive to do anything. Now you would know that if you were successful, you become an enemy of the government and you'll have your wealth stolen. You know, this experience, by the way, went on in Rome. Rome to the point where there were so many indulgences afforded Roman citizens, the Roman citizens stopped working, and they had the largest military in the world. It sounds like the United States, doesn't it? And they went into debt. And they didn't have, at the time, fiat currency where you could just make pretend money. So what they did is they made their currency, they changed their currency such that the coins, such that they were smaller, representing the same denomination, and they were less pure. Rather than being 99% pure silver, they were like 75% pure silver, and they were reduced in size by about 30%. But that didn't work. Just took more of those coins to buy the things that they used to buy with fewer of them. So the next thing they did is they went to war against the wealthy. And they ran a campaign, paying your fair share. And what they did is they confiscated their property, their estates, their savings, and their income. But rather than resolve the issue, it put Rome in a position of bankruptcy, and it could no longer afford to have their military, their hired legions, and shortly thereafter, there was no more Rome. We're back to the same situation now. The biggest problem with what the United States is doing with the likes of Toyota and UBS and now Credit Suisse is that when you strong-arm companies and confiscate their earnings, what you do is create an environment where nobody wants to succeed, where there's no incentive to succeed. This was largely the problem with Argentina. Argentina for many years had one of the most robust economies in the world. It was, I think, even in the top seven or eight most prosperous economies in the world in Argentina. And the dictatorial regime constantly was changing the rules, and there was no rule of law, and there was no certainty that if you were successful, you would get the benefits of your success. That's what happens in every Islamic country. There's no rule of moral law. And when you start confiscating people's money through blackmail, which is that's what the government used in this case, which uses in most cases, what you create is a disincentive for people to invest their money and their energies. It's a terrible problem. And it has consequences. Matter of fact, for those who listened to what the Pope said on his ride back from lying and deceiving and misrepresenting throughout the Middle East in his tour of Bethlehem and then in East Jerusalem, what you find is him going to war on his plane ride back against capitalism. You know, he says that the problem with capitalism, and he called it a great curse, is that it is all about money and not about people. But I've said this 1,000 times. I'm probably going to say it 1,000 times. This Pope is an absolute nincompoop. The only reason I can even imagine that he is popular is because he's so stupid he appears happy. And because in a faith that is so obviously false, having a village idiot be the clown parroting and puppeting the faith appeals to those who have chosen a religion that is based on obvious lies. Economics systems are all based on the deployment of three things: capital, manpower, and tangible assets. Those are the three things that are ingredients in every economic system: capital, manpower, and assets. Doesn't matter if the economic system is that of a hunter-gatherer, if it's fascist, if it's socialist, if it's communist, if it's free enterprise. They all use exactly the same components, to create an economy. The only difference, really, is in ownership and control. That really is it. And in that regard, every economic system is capitalistic because they all use capital. Now, the Pope were to go to war against capitalism as if some other economic solution is better, and I think he would promote communism. The problem with that is that all three use exactly the same elements to generate an economy. Capital, money, property, and assets, which are anything from land that is cultivated to factories to equipment, and people that operate or produce in those environments. And all of it is established and traded. The products are purchased and equipment is bought using invested capital. And so to say that the capitalistic system is inhuman, it doesn't take into the human component, is just to be completely oblivious about economics. Yeah, it's to say that, okay, there's another system out there. So you want an economic system that is human based. Okay, then what's going to be the currency? Who determines where those humans work? Who determines how much those humans are paid for their work? Who invests in the places where those humans work? Who allocates what those humans produce? Who determines where those humans live? If you wanted to have a economic system that is only human based, what is your medium of exchange? What are those humans going to be doing? Where are they going to be doing it? Why are they going to be doing it? When you have a person that's as dumb, just as ignorant and as irrational as this current Pope, and you recognize that he is extraordinarily popular, highest approval ratings probably in memory among popes, among Roman Catholics, you have to question whether or not the vast preponderance of people in this world have lost it. Have they all gone to the point where they are universally nincompoops? Is that what we've become? Reuters reported last week that the two new nominees to the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors are expected to push for an expanded role for the Federal Reserve in managing the U.S. economy. I want you to tell me where in the U.S. Constitution there is a mention of an organization called the Federal Reserve. I would like you to find, if you could go to the section of the Constitution for me and find where the rights of the Federal Reserve and its responsibilities as well as its limitations are specified. The Federal Reserve wants to expand its role in managing the U.S. economy. The Federal Reserve isn't even part of the federal government. It's an independent company. This idea that we have ceded control of the U.S. economy to a banking cartel ought to make you want to just absolutely scream. And the fact that the banking cartel, the central bank, is secretive, that the central bank can set the interest rate on U.S. debt, that the central bank is called the Federal Reserve, both terms are deceptive. Has nothing to do with the federal government. It's not part of the federal government. There is no mandate for it in the U.S. Constitution. And there is no reserve. It's a debt organization. If you look at the dollars that you carry in your pocket, your wallet, or purse, they are promissory notes. They're a liability document rather than saying that that they are an asset for you, they are actually a liability, and the debt is owed for that liability to the Federal Reserve. And they want to be more active. They want their role expanded in managing the U.S. economy. Now, the U.S. economy ought not be managed. That's the whole idea of the free enterprise system. In the free enterprise system, you do not manage the economy. In a socialistic economy, the government manages the three aspects of economy. They tell the workforce where to go. They own and dictate what happens at factories and on farms, collective farms. And they are the currency. They have absolute control of the currency. You know, in a fascist system, the only difference is that individuals can own businesses and property. But those businesses are tightly controlled by the government, and the people are controlled by the government, making it in practice very much the same as a socialistic or communist economy. But in a free enterprise economy, the economy ought not be controlled. It's the unseen hand. It's everybody doing what is in their best interest that creates the economy. If you go to work trying to do the best thing that you can do and create value and do a good job, and everybody does the same thing, then you have a robust economy, particularly if that economy is based upon the rule of law, so that if you benefit, you get the reward of your labor. And if you fail, then, you know, you have the consequence. The economy ought not be managed in a free enterprise system. And if you take the free enterprise system away from America, you got nothing left. It all collapses. Well, they want to replace a raft of current programs with more permanent tools that will enable them to manipulate the economy. The arrival of former Bank of Israel Governor Stanley Fisher from and former U.S. Treasury official Bernard are going to add two strong voices to chair Janet Yellen's view that loose money policy needs to be extended to turn around a slack labor market. This is the idea that was tried in Rome that was so unsuccessful. It's the idea that is failing right now in France, that you can deflate your currency, you can devalue your currency into economic prosperity. Now, I had the opportunity the other day to hear an excerpt of Janet Yellen's commencement speech. And I want to tell you, it was amazing that someone who was that inarticulate would be the head of the Federal Reserve. And yet, nonetheless, it's true. What they are trying to do is unconstitutional, and it is against our interests. Welcome back to Shattering This. The Fed is trying to decide whether to liquidate or hold the $4 trillion of investments. We'll put that in air quotes. It has on its balance sheet. Think about that for a moment. The United States is over $17 trillion in debt. And the largest holder of that debt is the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve doesn't have any assets. It only has liabilities. And yet, the Federal Reserve, which has no money, has $4 trillion in treasury bills on its balance sheet. It bought $4 trillion worth of treasury bills by creating $4 trillion more money. They said, okay, we'll just, here's a rounding error in the computer, that rather than the overall availability of currency being $100 trillion, we'll make it $104 trillion, and with that $104 trillion, we'll buy the country's T-bills 4 trillion of them, doubling the amount that's owned by China, almost tripling the amount that's owned by China, because nobody else wants them. And it's not just the Fed. The government's playing this game, too. The Social Security Trust Fund now holds Treasury bills, as does the federal employees' pension plans. The government is buying its own bills because nobody else wants them. And the reason nobody else wants them is because they know what we have done to the value of our currency, our dollar, by adding to the money supply. When you add to the money supply, you devalue your currency. And so all of this devalues the currency. When you devalue the currency, the only way for someone then to loan you money when you're devaluing your currency is for them to pay you a high rate of interest. Well, the government knows that if it has to pay 10% interest on the $17 trillion of accumulated debt, that it will, that it's going to add each year $1.7 trillion to the annual deficit. The annual debt, rather than going up by anywhere from $1 billion a year, now will go up by nearly $3 billion a year. And that $3 billion you need then to get people to borrow, to loan you, and the only way you're going to get people to loan you that kind of money is to pay them a high rate of interest. So it's a debt spiral. Beyond that, once you get over 100% of debt to accumulated debt to GDP, you're a train wreck. That's for the problem of Greece. It's the problem of Italy. The problem of America. Our debt is now over 100% of our gross domestic product. And as such, you have to pay a higher rate of interest if someone thinks there's a high likelihood that you may not pay the debt at all, that you may go into default. And so here is the Federal Reserve admitting now that it has $4 trillion of investments. Its investments, they're American T-bills, because no one else wants them. We played a shell game to keep the illusion that we weren't bankrupt because we couldn't service our debt any longer. And it's not working. You know, these are all these marvelous tools that the Fed allegedly has to manage the U.S. economy. And what it has done is just radically increased the money supply, which has devalued the currency with the expectation that that's going to create employment. It ain't working. The U.S. economy shifted into reverse in the first 3 months of this year. It didn't just putter along at a, you know, at a horribly low rate. It contracted. It diminished by 1%. And this is a really serious problem. Now, the government wants you to believe that the economy actually shrunk by 1% in the first quarter of this year because it was cold in the east. I mean, folks, you can't have global warming on one hand and your excuse be it was cold as the problem for your economy. But beyond the duplicity of that, you're going to tell me that that factories, for example, people eating food, for example, is going to shrink at 1% just because it's a little chilly outside? But look at the numbers. The numbers don't say that. The numbers say they had nothing to do with the weather. So you've got government economists lying to you. Do you know that consumer spending represents 2/3 of the American economy? Consumer spending is 2/3 of the American economy. And that 2/3, consumer spending, which you could say, okay, consumer spending is what trended down because it was snowy and yucky outside in the east, and therefore they didn't want to go out and out to dinner. They made dinner at home. But consumer spending was up 3.1 1% in this quarter. So in the quarter that the overall economy shrunk by 1%, consumer spending was up over 3%. So what does that tell you? That tells you that business investment, the businesses buying equipment, businesses expanding their capacity, shrunk rapidly. And businesses don't shrink their investment in plant and equipment based upon the temperature outside. None do. But
you know, Yada?
Yes.
The temperature related shrinking just takes us full circle right back to the Cialis story. You know.
Thank you. It's cold outside, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, everything is related to Cialis. So, yes. It's cold outside.
Interrelated.
Yeah. Don't blame me. It's cold outside.
Yeah.
It was a little warmer, I'd look a lot better.
So we need the pharmaceutical companies to solve the problem of the economy, then, obviously. You know,
obviously. But can you imagine here, your economy is shrinking quarter to quarter at 1%. That's what happened in the first quarter. And you blame the weather. And you blame the weather in the midst of a report that shows consumer spending, which represents 2/3 of overall economic activity, and it's up over 3%. So there's a 4% decline in a third of the economy, and it has nothing to do with the weather, which is business spending.
Right. Well, every morning it's gotten more open. I watch the CNBC in the morning, and the talking heads now, almost every morning now, engage at least a couple moments of speculation. Oh, I've got a noise in the background. Sorry about
yes.
that.
Yeah.
That's the early phone a second. But the talking heads on CNBC are now, like, on an almost daily basis now, speculating as to what's going on, you know, relative to the, you know, irrational exuberance of the indices, apparently, versus the actual on-the-ground, you know, realities of the physical economy. And every
right.
day we're regaled with tech stories and talk about Apple and cell phones. Well, you can't run an economy on cell phones, you know.
No, particularly since all those cell phones are manufactured in China.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, you can talk all you want about how many cell phones Apple is selling worldwide or how many Samsung is selling worldwide. But they're all made in China. And since there are, even in that regard, there are 7 billion active cell phone accounts worldwide now, there's only 5 to 10 million Americans. So we aren't even a hiccup in the overall cell phone market. But here you've got not only is the economy shrinking, and by the way, the government said, oh, the first quarter of the year is just going to be a wash. We won't have any contraction, reasonable growth. And they were just blindsided by this. And even the Wall Street economists who expected a little bit of a contraction, the contraction was way beyond, almost double what they expected. And then you have the government lying to the people as to what the cause was, and their lie is in absolute conflict with their biggest economic scheme, which is the redistribution of wealth based on global warming.
But they've seemed to have beaten back the flames a little bit by weeks or months. I mean, I started expecting huge, real downturns with the first quarter earnings reports in early April. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was something of an effect, but that they managed to fend that off. And just what's going on right now just seems to me, to be completely, you know, an illusion. They start to see Sears closing 60 stores and Staples closing 200 stores. And just a Walmart whining and stuff. You know, consumer retail participation in the economy is a huge part of the economy, and that can't easily be hidden. You know?
Well, and the problem with consumer spending in America is that we don't make things anymore. You know, manufacturing now is about 9% of GDP. And if you're not making anything anymore, then all you're doing is paying people to serve other people. And an economy that has to buy everything from abroad that it wants and simply pays people to serve people, that is not a viable economy. You can't sustain that for any length of time.
Well, my question is why, if you don't smell a rat, once you realize that our government is taking our tax money and using it to provide, to provide incentives, to provide tax incentives and moving and startup expenses for corporations to move to other countries, especially China. So it's like,
we have huge disincentives to manufacture goods in the United States, and the disincentives are enormous. One is that America has one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. If you want people to manufacture goods in your country and you want them to employ citizens of your country, you ought not have the highest tax rates for corporations of any country in the world. I mean, you just start there. But that's the start of it. And then there's all of the impositions on healthcare expenses, which are enormous. There's the Social Security tax that the corporation has to pay. It just goes on and on. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There's a war going on in Libya. Not well reported because it's very difficult to have a correspondent in Libya these days. But there is nonetheless a war going on. Just in the first couple of days of that war, 70 people were killed in just one place, and just in Tripoli. And the reason for the war that is transpiring right now in Libya is that Hifter, H-I-F-T-E-R, is a... he is a jihadist. He is a warlord in Libya, and he has built one of the largest private militias in Libya. And he used to be, as I understand it, had some association with the Gaddafi government, and he is just. Decided that one day last week that he didn't like the fact that there were so many independent Islamic militias in control of various regions throughout Libya, and that there was no central autonomy, that it was really you go into each region and you're into your own little principality where a warlord and his militia were in charge. So since he had the largest militia, he decided that he would go to war against all of the smaller militias. And he began his militia attack in the parliament and began it in the capital. And he said, hey, you can trust me. I'm a really good guy. That all I'm trying to do is eliminate the Islamic jihadist militias. And we'll just all be one happy family under my militia, and that'll bring peace and harmony to the country. And he said that man's plotted this for months, and they say that his goal is to rid the country of the Islamist militias that he accuses of acting like terrorists, as engaging in this typical Islamic fun stuff: assassination, kidnapping, rape, murder. Rape. Yeah, I know I mentioned rape twice, but Islamic terrorists particularly like rape. A line from Blazing Saddles for those who are, I don't know if there's ever any humor in any of this. Maybe I shouldn't have even said it, but it is a line from Blazing Saddles. But nonetheless, that's what he's doing. He has declared himself, and he's the head of an Islamist militia, as the militia of militias, as the warlord of warlords. And that he is now going to war with the other militias because the other militias, he claims, are murderous, that they're involved in way too many kidnappings and rapes and the like. And so that's what we left when we broke Libya. Now, this alliance, by the way, is this... Hifter, who is managing this. I don't know if you can call it a coup. I mean, if you're to have a coup, what you're doing is you're using typically arms to overthrow a legitimate government, whether that government is a monarchy or a dictator or a elected government. Well, you know, there really is no government of Libya. It's a collection of Mujahideen terrorist groups. But he is now the king of the terrorists and literally trying to fight his way to supremacy amongst all the terrorists, because he says, you know, there really is no Libyan military. We can't deploy our military against the terrorist gangs, because really all we are is a collection of terrorist gangs. He, by the way, was un-American, lived in Falls Church until 2007. They say it, nice five-bedroom home. He had another home in the around the Westwood Country Club. So, you know, he's essentially un-American, living a good life. And he went back to Libya to play jihadist. Now, if we left Libya in that condition, you know, I remember John McCloud saying, you know, we got to go help these freedom fighters. You know, we need to get rid of this madman, Muammar Gaddafi. Well, look at the mess you made, John. Look at what you left in its wake. And come to realize that all those guns that you funneled into Libya, that they're now being used by Boko Haram. That they're now being used in this, I can't even call it a civil war. Well, beyond the fact there's nothing civil about it, all you've got is militias fighting militias. You made the mess, John. When are you going to learn? When are we going to stop doing this kind of stuff? Well, the Libyan parliament is no more. We have a war of warlords in Libya.